As I've been asked to give teaching on the seven limb prayers, first, as always, it is important to have the right motivation or the right intention why we have to learn, why we have to study, why we have to receive the teaching. We should have a good reason to learn or to study. If we just learn the Dharma just out of curiosity, then it is not right. And also, if we just learn the Dharma not to practice but to gain knowledge, then also it is not right. Actually, Dharma is a teaching that we need to study, and also we need to practice. And then, after that, we need to experience the Dharma. If we can experience the Dharma, then it means we gain the realization or the inner qualities through the practice of learning or the practicing the Buddha Dharma. So, therefore, first it is important to have the right motive or right reason to study. And to have the right motivation, first we need to develop the thought of renunciation towards the whole samsara. This is very important because Lord Buddha has given enormous amount of teachings in order to suit the different mentalities or in order to lead the sentient beings from suffering and dissatisfaction to temporary and ultimate happiness. So, the purpose of all these teachings given by Buddha is to gain liberation and to attain enlightenment state by the followers. Buddha has never given any teaching just to remain in the samsara, or Buddha has never given any teaching which is only meant for this life, or which is only meant to gain higher rebirth in the next life. So, in short, Buddha has never given any teaching just to gain a result which are within this samsara. So, Buddha has given the teaching in order to liberate us or the followers from the samsara. And if we as a follower just practice Dharma to gain mundane results, just like long life, good health, prosperous in this life alone, or just to gain higher rebirth, then it means our motive or our goal or our purpose of practicing Dharma and Buddha's wish is not the same. Buddha has given teaching for us to gain liberation. But if we practice Dharma for the result, for the mundane result which is within the samsara, then it means our wish is against the Buddha's wish. Our motive is against the Buddha's wish. So, therefore, we, as a Buddha's follower, we must practice or do Dharma actions with the thought of renunciation towards the whole samsara. So in short, those who don't wish to gain liberation from the samsara, those who really want to stay in this samsara forever, then such person will not become a Buddhist or Buddha's followers. So therefore, the Torah renunciation is very important for all of us as a Buddhist to develop. It is said in the teaching, it is too good to use the precious and profound Dharma for this life alone. It is too good to use this sacred and secret teachings of Lord Buddha for higher rebirth alone. So therefore, first and foremost, we must have the thought of renunciation towards the whole samsara. In this world, for example, there are many different countries, many different cultures, many different kinds of people, many different races, and many different religions, etc. And some are more developed, some are less developed, or some are backward countries. But wherever we go, we would not find a single place where there's no suffering. In this world, all are experiencing the suffering. For example, when we moved from a poor condition or like backward country to a developed country, then although we can overcome certain difficulties like bad roads or not good electricity, not good water, etc. But just overcoming these basic requirements doesn't mean that once we are in that developed country where there's a good road, good electricity, good water, but still we have many physical pains and mental sufferings and mental stress, etc. So it clearly shows the material world alone will not give us the real happiness, will not overcome the sufferings that we really need to remove it. So therefore, we can say the whole world is in the nature of suffering because no one in this world is free from all the sufferings. So, I mean, all the ordinary human beings who are born in this world out of their own negative actions and emotions, all of them need to experience the sufferings. But, of course, in this world there are many great masters who are not caught up by the negative emotions and actions, but they came here just for us, just to help us, just to guide us, just to rescue us, just to protect us. For them, they are here not because of their own negative karma and emotion, but they are here with loving kindness and compassion to help the sentient beings. So when I say all are suffering, I mean all the ordinary human beings who are caught up in this samsara through their own negative actions and emotions. So all these ordinary beings are experiencing great suffering. Although some have less suffering and some have more suffering, but overall, all of us are experiencing the suffering. And also, we can't say the richest person in this world is the most happiest person. We can't say the most famous person is the most happiest person in this world. We can't say the most powerful person is the most happiest person in this world. So it clearly shows the power, fame, and wealth are not the real cause of happiness. So through this way, we can understand the whole world is in the nature of suffering. Similarly, the whole samsara is in the nature of suffering. And if we know this, then it is easier for us to abandon the attachment towards the samsara. When we don't have attachment, then it is easy for us to develop the genuine wish to gain liberation from the whole samsara. And such wish is called the thought of renunciation. Then based on this, we need to develop the infinite loving kindness, which means wishing all the sentient beings to gain happiness and to engage in the virtuous deeds or Dharma practice, which are the cause of happiness. And then we need to develop the infinite compassion, which means wishing all the sentient beings to be free from suffering and to be free from engaging in the negative actions, which are the cause of suffering. So, loving kindness and compassion are very important. These two practices are fundamental practice of Mahayana Buddhist tradition. And to have the general practice of these two, first, it is important for us to know to whom we need to develop these two thoughts. So we need to identify the object of our practice of loving kindness and compassion. Actually, every human being, even the animals, they do have certain amount of loving kindness and compassion to their own dear ones. But that is not enough. What we really need is we need the limitless loving kindness and compassion, which means our object is limitless. Because of this, the subject or the thought is also known as the limitless loving kindness and compassion. So, when we practice Dharma, we are not practicing Dharma for oneself alone. We are not practicing Dharma for a few people. We are not practicing for all the Buddhist followers alone. We are practicing Dharma not only for Buddhists, and also not only for those others who are following other religions, non-Buddhist religions, and also we are practicing not only for all the human beings, including the non-believers. So we are practicing Dharma for all the beings, which means all the human beings in this world, all the animals in this world, along with all the beings of the six realms in this samsara. So our goal, our object is wide. Our object is limitless because we extend our loving kindness and compassion to all the sentient beings without any exception or discrimination. So if we really can practice the infinite or the limitless loving kindness and compassion, then we will not have any biased thoughts. Then we won't have thoughts like, I like this person and I don't like those persons. We will not have two kinds of thoughts towards the fellow sentient beings. If we have two thoughts like, like someone but don't like others, then it means our thought is biased. And it means our thought is limited. We cannot extend to all the beings. So if we really can practice the loving kindness and compassion towards all the beings, then naturally we won't hate any other based on different religion, different caste, different race, different nationalities, etc. We will have love and compassion to all, irrespective of their religions, their nationalities, their race, their culture, their language, etc. Practice of compassion is a universal religion. So all are talking about this compassion. So it is important for us also to emphasize on the practice of loving kindness and compassion, because without these two fundamental practices, we cannot develop the enlightenment mind or the bodhicitta, which is the key practice of the Mahayana tradition. There's no Mahayana practice without bodhicitta, and there's no bodhicitta practice without the loving kindness and compassion to all. So therefore, first it is important to develop the loving kindness and compassion to all the beings. And it is not just enough to know the meaning of loving kindness and compassion. After having the intellectual understanding on these two thoughts, then we need to apply these teaching or such understanding into our daily life. We must implement these teachings into action. And the more we practice, the more we meditate on these, the more it will develop. So therefore, we need to practice these thoughts every day, again and again, until we can extend our loving kindness and compassion to all the sentient beings all the time without any exception or without any excuse. And then, based on these two positive thoughts, we need to develop the bodhicitta or the enlightenment mind. This enlightenment mind is very important for the Mahayana practice. As I said before, there's no Mahayana practice without the bodhicitta. So bodhicitta is like the wishful feeling jewel. Bodhicitta is like our guidance that will lead us to gain the liberation from the samsara, and eventually it will lead us to attain the Buddhahood. Only bodhicitta can lead us. Without bodhicitta, we will not gain liberation according to the Mahayana tradition, according to the Mahayana path, and we cannot gain attainment or the Buddhahood. So bodhicitta is very important. Bodhicitta means enlightenment mind. And the purpose of attaining the enlightenment state is not for oneself, not for a few beings, but for the sake of all the sentient beings. Actually, it is said in the teaching that the space has no limits. Similarly, sentient being also has no limits. And all these limitless sentient beings has been our own close ones or dear parents in this lifetime or in the past lifetimes. We can say this because we are born in this samsara not only one time, but we are born in this samsara for infinite times. And whenever we are born, we won't have the same parents again and again. So through this we can say all the beings have been our dear ones or parents in this life or in the past lifetime. So now it is the time for us to repay their kindness. At the moment when we have this precious human life, we have the best opportunity to repay their great kindness. And the way we need to repay their kindness is not through material gifts. Actually, it is impossible to give material things to all the sentient beings, which is countless. It is not only 7 billion people, but it is countless. So, the best way to repay their kindness is through mental practice, through mental practice or through Dharma practice. So, by developing the bodhicitta and by practicing the bodhicitta, we can repay their kindness. So, at the moment, we need to repay their kindness, but we don't have the power to rescue all the sentient beings from this ocean of samsara. For example, if oneself don't know how to swim, then oneself will drown in the ocean. And if oneself is drowning in the ocean, then that person cannot save or cannot rescue others who are also drowning in the ocean, in the same ocean. Similarly, at the moment, we ourselves is drowning in the ocean of samsara. At this time, we don't have the power to rescue others who are also drowning in the ocean of samsara. So, not only we don't have, but some others also don't have. So, only Buddha has the full power to rescue all the beings from the ocean of samsara. So, therefore, we also need to attain Buddhahood for the sake of all the sentient beings. So, this is the bodhicitta. This is known as the wishing bodhicitta. And engaging bodhicitta means we cannot attain Buddhahood without any cause and condition. We cannot attain Buddhahood with wrong cause. And we cannot attain Buddhahood through incomplete cause. We need to attain Buddhahood through correct cause and through complete cause. So the complete cause means first we need to practice Dharma. So, we can repay their kindness through developing such wishing bodhicitta, and the next one is engaging bodhicitta, which means in order to attain Buddhahood, we are engaging in Dharma practice, as I mentioned earlier. So, this is called the engaging bodhicitta. So, through these two practices, then later or gradually, we can develop the ultimate bodhicitta. And with these two bodhicitta together, then we can attain the Buddhahood. So, we as a beginner, we must emphasize on the relative bodhicitta, which has the wishing bodhicitta and engaging bodhicitta. So, in short, right motivation means to develop the thought of renunciation, the infinite loving kindness, compassion, and wishing bodhicitta and engaging bodhicitta. So with this in mind, you should receive the teaching. And when we receive the teaching, or when you receive the teaching, it is important to know that Buddha is like the skillful doctor. Buddha's teaching is like the medicine. We ourselves is like the patients or the sick person. And our own anger, jealousy thoughts, attachment, ignorance, arrogance, pride, etc. are like our sickness. And receiving teaching and following the Buddha's teaching is like receiving the doctor's advice and following the doctor's advice. So, with such perception, we need to practice Dharma. actually all the Buddhist followers need to practice Dharma by themselves. For example, when people are sick, they have to take medicine by themselves. If others take medicine, that will not cure their own sickness. To cure their own sickness, they have to take medicine by themselves. Similarly, to cure our sickness of negative thoughts, we need to take medicine by ourselves. We need to practice Dharma by ourselves. So, it is important for all of us to practice Dharma. And today's teaching is on seven limb prayers. Actually, there are different kinds of seven limb prayers, such as the seven limb prayers that is there during the initiation, and that one is taught by Buddha himself in the Tantra. Actually, there are three main Hevajra Tantra. One is a root Tantra, two is a commentary Tantra. The two commentary Tantra are known as a common commentary Tantra, Samputa, and uncommon commentary Tantra, Vajrapanjara. And this seven limb prayers that are used in the initiation is from the Hevajra Uncommon Commentary Tantra Vajrapanjara. So it was taken from that Tantra. So here today, I'm not going to explain on that seven limb prayers. And also there are another seven limb prayers which is explained in the Bodhisattva Jayavatara by the great Acharya of Nalanda University, known as the Acharya Shantideva. So today, what I'm going to explain is the seven limb prayers, which is in the Samyutta-Bhatra prayer. So, actually this is an aspirational prayer. And as a preliminary part or in the beginning, it mentions about the seven limb prayer. So seven limb prayer, out of seven limbs, the first six limbs is like the accumulation of merit. So in this Samyutta-Bhatra prayer, the first limb is the limb of prostration. So the first limb is the limb of prostration. There are two. This one also has two. One is general prostration through body, speech, and mind. then in the second part, these three bodhisattva mind is divided. So, in the text it says, we need to do prostration through our body, speech and mind to Buddhas. And here, Buddha means not only one Buddha. It means all the Buddhas of the Ten Directions. So it means all the Buddhas, we need to do prostration, we need to imagine or we need to visualize that we are doing the prostration to all the Buddhas of the Ten Directions. And who is doing prostration? Then it means I, the one who is doing the prostration. So we should imagine that we are doing prostration to all the Buddhas of the Ten Directions. And how you do prostration is that our own physical body and speech and mind, with these three, we do prostration. With the respected, in a respectful manner, in a respectful manner, we do our prostration to all the Buddhas. So this is a general prostration without dividing the prostration of body, speech and mind. So, when we do prostration, even like in our house or in the temple, when we do prostration to a Buddha's statue or Buddha's tanga or Buddha's picture, we should think that this is a real Buddha. We should not think that this is not a real Buddha, this is just a statue, this is just a tanga, this is just a picture, and I'm doing prostration just to a tanka or just to a statue. If we think in this way, then we won't accumulate great merit. So mentally, we should think that this is a real Buddha in the three-dimensional form. And this is a real Buddha in the nature of light. Actually, when we visualize the Buddha, we should think that this Buddha is not like our ordinary human body, which is full of flesh, bone, blood, etc. We should think that this Buddha is in the nature of light, like a rainbow. When we see a rainbow, we can see very clearly the multicolor of the rainbow, but we cannot touch the rainbow by our own hand. No matter how much effort that will be put to grab or to hold it, it is not possible for us to hold it. So we should think that this is the real Buddha. Whenever we do prostration to Buddha's statue or Buddha's tanga, we should think that this is a real Buddha. And also, this is not just one Buddha. We should think that this is the combination of all the Buddha, or in other words, we can think that we are doing the prostration to all the Buddhas in different forms, or we can combine all them in this one Buddha and think that this is the combination of all the Buddha. And with such understanding, with such intention, we should do the prostration. So if you do prostration in such way, then it is more meritorious. Thinking this is just a statue and then doing prostration, and thinking this is a real Buddha and doing prostration has big different. If you just think this is a statue or thanga and then do prostration, then we won't accumulate great merit. It won't be a meritorious. It won't be a great merit. And if we think this is a real Buddha, then we will have great merit. So whether we can earn or accumulate great merit or not, not only depend on the object of our prostration, it also mainly it depends on our intention, our motive. And then it explains about the physical prostration. So here it means through the power of Charyabhatra prayer. Charyabhatra means good actions or good behavior or good deeds. Actually, charya means the actions or the behavior or the attitude, and bhadra means good or like wholesome. So through the power of having sincere faith and devotion in the Samyutta Bhadra or the Charyabhatra prayer, then we need to control our negative emotions like not having faith in the Buddha, etc. So we should control our negative thoughts and emotion. And then we should think that all the Buddhas are in front of us in the real, in the nature of light, the resultant one in the nature of light. And then we need to do prostration. Although at the moment we don't have the fortune to see the Buddha through our eyes directly, but at the moment we should visualize that we are seeing the Buddha by our own eyes directly. And then when we do physical prostration, we should think that not only one body is doing prostration. We should think that mentally we should multiply our physical body into like countless. Or as many as we should multiply our physical body as many as the atoms of the Buddha field. So it means countless. We should multiply our own physical body into countless. And then all these countless bodies are doing prostration. To all the Buddhas. Actually, it is said, whether we can receive how much amount of blessings by praying to a Buddha depends on our own thinking. If we think this is just a statue, then pray, and then through this we will get lesser blessing because we are not praying mentally we are not praying to a real Buddha. And if we think this is a real Buddha, when we see a statue, by seeing a statue, if we think this is a real Buddha in a three-dimensional form, by praying to this, then we can receive the blessings of real Buddha. If you just pray to us, if you just think this is a statue and pray to it, pray to Buddha, then we will get the blessing of the Buddha statue, not the blessings of real Buddha. So, how much amount of blessing that we will get through praying depends on how we see, how we perceive this object of our prostration. So, it is important for all of us to really think this is a real Buddha in the nature of light. So, in this physical prostration, we should multiply our physical body as much as the atoms of the Buddha field. Actually, the civilian prayer is very important in order to accumulate great merit. For instance, when we do our prostration, at that time we cover a certain amount of land. When we do the prostration, our body can cover a certain amount of land or the ground. And the more we cover, the more we can gain, the more we can gain the merit, the more merit we can gain. So, in the sutra, it says, just by saying the word prostration, it has great benefit. It has a kind of unimaginable benefit. So if we really do prostration with sincere motivation in a proper way, then there's no doubt that through this prostration we can accumulate great merit. Now, the next one, it explains about the mental prostration. Normally, when we say prostration, it means physical prostration. It refers to the physical prostration. But in the teaching or in the text, it also mentions about the mental prostration, which means mentally, we should think in a very profound way. Actually, big and small are made by our thoughts. In reality, there's no big and small. There's no spacious and narrow. All these are thoughts. All these are not a reality. So, mentally, we need to think that on one atom, there's a infinite Buddhas as much as the atoms of the Buddha field on one atom. Like this atom, there are many atoms like this. There are infinite atoms like this. So we should imagine there are countless and countless of Buddhas. In short, we should think that on the atoms of all the universe, there are infinite Buddhas. On each of these atoms, there are infinite Buddhas. So it means like inconceivable. And to all these Buddhas, we need to develop sincere faith and devotion. So this is a mental prostration. Now the verbal prostration means to all these Buddhas, we need to offer praise with great melodies, and we need to recite, or we need to say about their infinite qualities. Infinite qualities of all these Buddhas. So, with sincere motivation, if we think that there are infinite Buddhas or countless Buddhas, and we are offering the praise to all these countless Buddhas with great melodies, then it means this is the verbal prostration. Actually, it is not possible for us to explain all the qualities of the Buddha. Buddha's qualities is infinite. There's no chance for us to say all the qualities of the Buddha. For example, the space has no limits. So when birds fly in the sky, and after a while, the birds will land on the ground. When birds land on the ground, it does not mean the space has been exhausted or there's no more space for bird to fly. But it means the energy of the bird's wing to fly has been exhausted. That's why the birds stop flying. The birds start to land on the ground or on the tree, etc. Similarly, no matter how great scholar we are or one are, that person can explain the Buddha's qualities, and after a while, the person will conclude the explanation on Buddha's quality. At that time, it doesn't mean that that person has explained all the Buddha's quality, but it means that person knows only that much of Buddha's quality. He don't know more than that. That's why he need to conclude his talk on Buddha's quality. So, here, although we cannot explain all the qualities, but we just imagine that we are praising the Buddha by talking about Buddha's qualities, which are infinite. So mentally we should think that we are praising the Buddha's, we are praising the Buddha by seeing his own qualities. So, by doing prostration, not only we can accumulate great merit, but also it can purify our negative actions or our faults. Actually, it can purify the general negative actions, and especially it can purify the pride or the arrogance and actions that are motivated by pride or arrogance. Thinking that I am better than Buddha or I am higher than Buddha, etc. So, this prostration can accumulate merit and also can purify the negative actions. So, when we do prostration, we should do prostration in a such way, through our physical body, through our speech, and also through our mind. If we just do physical prostration without the support of mind and speech, then we won't accumulate great merit. For example, if there's a true person doing prostration to a same Buddha statue. One is doing prostration with the right motivation, with the right visualization. Another one is doing without such right motivation or visualization, but other person is doing prostration just to gain, just to lose weight, or just thinking that this is one kind of exercise to make his or her own body fit. So, if that person do prostration to Buddha with such mundane intention, then of course that person will not accumulate great merit because the intention is not right. Intention is very mundane, very worldly intention. So, whether we can accumulate great merit through prostration or not, not only depends on our physical prostration, but mainly depends on our own mental prostration. Then the next one is limb of offering. The second limb is known as the limb of offering. Actually, there are two kinds of offering. I don't know exactly how to translate these two words in English, but I will say like general offering and matchless offering. Actually, the seven limb prayers, the later ones are more meritorious than the earlier ones. So because of this, and they have this order of these seven limb prayers. So it means limb offering is more meritorious than limb of prostration. Likewise, it can apply to the next ones. So first, the general offering means like mundane objects, like flowers, like lotus flowers and other flowers. So, like flowers, when we offer flowers, we should have right intention. And also, we should collect the flower which is never stained with our own negative actions. For example, if we steal flowers from a person and then offer to a Buddha, then it is not right because our action is negative because we steal from a person and then make offering to the Buddha. Then that kind of offering is not right because we made a mistake or we commit a negative action to have this or to collect this flower. So we should collect the flowers without doing any wrong actions. Not only stealing, if we like steal money and then use this money to buy this flower, although we don't steal this flower, but we steal the money that bought this flower, then that also becomes stained. That also becomes fault. So, we should collect the flowers without doing any wrong actions or negative actions in the beginning. So therefore it calls the sacred flower or the excellent flower that we need to offer. And also we need to have a flower, we need to offer the flower which is not with any flies or any insects. A flower which is not with any insects or flies or bees. And also we need to offer all the best flowers in this world. And not only the best flowers, but also very well decorated flowers, like flower garlands and other flowers which are well decorated. And also we need to offer, of course we need to offer fresh flowers. Fresh is important. We as a human being, when we eat food, we prefer to eat fresh food. We don't like to eat old food. We all like to eat fresh food. And if we eat fresh food, but if we offer our old flower, then it's not right. Then it means we think of ourselves more than Buddha. Actually, we need to offer more to Buddha than for oneself. So, spending money or wealth so much for oneself alone and not spending for Dharma or like offerings, etc., then it means offering to Buddha, then it means we are using, sometimes maybe we are using our wealth in the wrong way, or we are using the money or the wealth which is based on the selfish thought. So we need to use to make offerings to Buddha or to help the sentient beings who really need the help or protections. So here anyway, we need to offer all the flowers, the fresh flowers, the best flowers, which are well decorated, which has a very good fragrance. And also we need to offer the the musical instruments or the musics to their ears, and also we need to offer scented water. All nowadays like perfumes, but long time ago when I was in France, I heard in some of these perfumes they put animal substances, so then it becomes not, how to say, not so pure, it is stained. Because to make this perfume, you need to kill some animals and then get some substance from them, and then mix with the perfume, and then they use this kind of perfume. So then this kind of perfume is also not harmless perfume, because it harms the animals. So we need to offer a perfume which is never stained with any misdeeds. We should not steal, and also in the perfume itself it should not have any animal products. We should offer the good ones which are faultless. Or like other scented water, water which is mixed with sandalwoods or others. And then also we need to offer like the umbrella which has a gold handle and also adorned with jewel ornaments. And also we need to offer others like Victoria banners and others. And also we need to offer lambs. Normally we say like marme. Marme means, in Tibetan we say marme. Mar means butter. So marme means like butter lamb. Or in Sanskrit we say aloke. Actually aloke not only means marme or butter lamb, it can also mean other lights. In Tibetan also we have other words like nangsal. Nangsal also means aloke. So nangsal means not only marme or butter lamb, it also means other lights. All the ones that illuminate others are called nangsal. So the more bright we offer, the more merit we can earn. So the most brightest object in this world is sun and moon. So we need to offer all these, not only butter lamps, but also lights and sun, moon, stars, all these lights we need to offer. For example, for ourselves, when we are in the house, when we are in the home, during the night time, we prefer to use electricity or we prefer to use lights than candlelight or the candles. We prefer to have electricity lights more than candlelights, because candlelight is not so strong. It does not illuminate clearly, or it does not have strong lights. So we feel it's not enough. The candlelight is not enough for us to give lights. So we prefer to have electricity lights. So if we prefer to have electricity life, then also when we make offerings, we also need to make offerings which has more lights, like sun, moon, stars, because mentally we can offer any object, own object or disown object, because there's no barrier, there's no demarcations. So if you offer like sun and moon or stars, then it does not mean that we are stealing something. We are not stealing. We are just mentally offering to the Buddha these objects like sun and moon, which is not owned by any being actually. So anyway, general objects means offering flowers, music, umbrella, and this special umbrella, or excellent umbrella, lamps or lights, and scented water and incense. Also, we need to offer all the great incense. So we need to offer all these general offering objects to all these Buddhas. General means objects that are available in this world. Or general means offering the worldly objects, not something that is beyond this world. And also like the three Dharma robes and other garments, or offering three Dharma robes, and also excellent fragrance, and then like small bags which is filled with good fragrance. Small cloth bag filled by substance which has great fragrance. And all are well decorated ones, so we need to offer all these. Now the matchless offering means offering an object which is not in this world. Actually, worldly objects are caused by our own karma and negative emotions. So when we say a matchless object, which means these are emanated or manifested by the noble bodhisattvas through the power of their samadhi and or the meditation and prayers. So therefore, these matchless offering objects are caused by the uncontaminated actions. So now I'm explaining the the seventh verse, which is on the back page. The seventh verse, the first verse on the back page. So the seventh verse, the second, the last two lines of the second, the last two lines of the seventh verse is the summary of prostration, limb of prostration, and the limb of offering. Actually, Bodhisattva Samyutapada's heart, from his heart, issues infinite offering objects with light rays, then offer all these to all the Buddhas of ten directions. So here we develop sincere faith in the such act of offering by the Samyutapada. Because of such power of faith, from our heart also, we imagine that we are also manifesting or issuing many offering objects and making offerings and doing prostration and making offerings to all the Buddhas. So, when we see a beautiful garden in other places, or when we see very beautiful flowers at anywhere, at that time we just think that we offer these flowers to Buddha. We offer these flowers mentally, not by stealing, but mentally. We just offer all these to other to Buddhas. Now, the third limb is the limb of compassion, which is the eighth verse of this seventh prayer. In the English it says, I confess every type of wrong that I have done in thought, word, or deed under the influence of desire, anger, or ignorance. So this verse, this eighth verse, is the limb of confession. Confession actually means having a strong regret on doing such and such negative actions. And also making a strong promise to, making a strong promise not to repeat the same mistake again. Making promise will help to avoid doing these negative actions again. Like, for instance, this morning I meet people, and one person make promise to me by saying now he will not drink alcohol. So making such promise can help that person to avoid the avoid drinking in the future. So I praised him. I said, it's very good. And I said, now you should make this promise. And I said, now you should you should not have any. You should decide on this. You should keep this promise. So, like this morning, yeah, one person make a promise to me by saying he will not drink alcohol anymore. So like this kind of promise can help not to repeat these same mistake again in the future. So here also, we should have promised not to repeat the the same mistake again or doing the negative actions again. Actually, when we do negative actions, it is better to say, if we don't hide our faults, if we don't hide our negative action, then the power of negative action will be less. It becomes weaker. Then other way around, if we do virtuous deeds or if we do Dharma practice, then it is better to hide, not to disclose what we are doing. So by this, then we can make our practice more powerful. But sometimes certain masters will say, I have done this and this in order to encourage others, in order to set an example for others. But otherwise, they will not say what they are doing. For example, in this world at the moment, we have many great masters, but we don't know what practice they are doing. They are doing practice on which deity, what sadhana they are doing every day. That we don't know, because they keep this secret to make their practice more powerful. Also, when masters, when they do retreat, we don't know they are doing retreat on which deity, or they are reciting which mantra when they are doing retreat. They will not tell. There's no need to tell, actually. So generally speaking, there's no need to tell. But sometimes there may be some exception. But generally speaking, there's no need to tell what they are reciting, what mantra they are reciting, what sadhana they are doing in their daily life. So actually, keeping our practice more secret can help us to accumulate more merit. And it will help us to have a more powerful practice. So here, we need to confess our negative actions which we have done through our body, speech and mind, which are motivated by our three poisonous thoughts, which means, which are motivated by our own ignorance and anger and attachments. Actually, we have done so many negative actions. Many of the times, we even don't know that we have done negative actions. Without any notice, we have also done many negative actions. Sometimes we don't realize whether this is a negative action or not, but we have done a lot. So we need to confess our negative actions with strong regret. If we feel strong regret, that will reduce the power of negative action, and that is also part of confessing our negative actions. we should feel strong as strong as we have taken the poison by mistake. And then we need to make strong resolution not to repeat this mistake again. Actually, when we confess the naked actions, we need four powers. First power is known as the power of shrine, which means the object to whom we are going to confess our negative actions. So here, in the beginning, we have already visualized all the Buddhas, and this is the power of shrine. This is the object to whom we are going to do all these seven limb prayers, including the present limb, which is the limb of confession. So we are confessing all our negative actions in front of all the Buddhas who are really in front of us. So we confess our negative actions with four powers. First one is power of shrine, which is the object. Second is the power of antidote, which means, second is power of regret, which means to feel strong regret. And third power is known as the power of antidote, which means from now on, we will not repeat the same mistake again in the future. Then the fourth power is called the power of revival, which means through doing this, we are convinced that our negative actions are purified. So with four powers, we need to confess all our actions, all our negative actions. We do negative actions without knowing, without disrespect. We do negative actions without knowing, or with disrespect, or with negligence, or with intention, or intentionally we also do some mistakes or some negative actions. So we need to confess all through four powers. Now the fourth limb is the limb of rejoicing in others' noble activities and virtues, which is the ninth verse. In the English it says, I rejoice in the meritorious deeds of all the Buddhas of the ten directions, the Bodhisattvas, Pratyeka Buddhas, Arahats, practitioners, and all sentient beings. Rejoicing in others' virtue means feeling good when someone is doing virtues. So we should feel happy and joy and good when we hear the noble activities of our gurus, our deities, our Buddhas and noble Bodhisattvas and others. So by doing this, we can also accumulate great merit. And to make our practice as a real antidote of our own jealousy thoughts, then we really need to practice this towards those ordinary human beings to whom we normally have jealous thoughts. Towards that person, if we can practice the rejoicing in their virtues, then it means that is a direct antidote of our own jealous thoughts towards them. Actually, jealous thought is the source of suffering, source of worry, source of anxiety. If someone is doing good, why we need to worry? Why we need to suffer? Why we need to feel sad? Why we need to feel unhappy? There's no reason to feel such. Because if we feel sad, then it's our own fault. Their good deeds makes our own mind sad, then it's not right. Instead of this, we should feel happy, we should support, we should appreciate, we should rejoice in their good deeds, then we can also feel happy by seeing or by hearing their good deeds. So, practice rejoicing in others' virtue or noble activities is a great meritorious deed. In the Buddha's teaching, it says, one of the easiest way to accumulate great merit is to practice rejoicing in others' virtue or noble activities. And not only it is very meritorious, but also it is the direct antidote of our jealousy thought, which is the source of many suffering. So we should rejoice in all the Buddhas, all the Gurus, deities, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and particular Buddhas and others, their virtues and their noble deeds. And now the next one, the next limb is the fifth limb, which is the limb of requesting to turn the wheel of Dharma. That is the tenth verse. In the English it says, I request all the enlightened protectors who have attained detachment of Buddhahood and illumine the worlds of the ten directions to turn the peerless wheel of Dharma. Illumine the worlds of ten directions means the Buddhas who are in the ten directions, because Buddhas are the one that removes or that dispels the darkness of ignorance of others or the followers. Who have attained the detachment of Buddhahood. Detachment of Buddhahood, it means who have detached on all the things, or who don't have any attachment to samsara or to this life or to self-purpose or to any objects. And through this way, they attain Buddhahood. I don't know if this English translation is correct or not, but it means that first, he don't have any attachment towards any objects like samsara or self-purpose or this life, next life, etc. So without having any attachment, then gradually can attain Buddhahood. So one who have attained the Buddhahood without having attachment to these things. So this is what it means when it says who have attained the detachment of Buddhahood. Actually, Buddha always help or benefit the sentient beings. But we need to have conditions. We need to gather conditions for Buddha to teach. For example, Shakyamuni Buddha, when he attends Buddhahood in Bodh Gaya, and then he said, now he has found a nectar-like Dharma, but this nectar-like Dharma teaching will not be understood by others. So that's why he doesn't give such precious teaching right after attaining the Buddhahood. Then the worldly gods and others, they supplicate, they request Buddha to turn the wheel of Dharma. And also at that time, then he saw there are five fortunate disciples who are ready to receive the Buddha's precious and profound teachings. So then, after 7 weeks of attaining the Buddhahood, then he gave first Buddha's teaching, first teaching of Dharma in Deer Park, Saranat, Varanasi, to five fortunate disciples on the Four Noble Truths. So likewise, to make an auspicious sign, to accumulate merit, we also need to request all the Buddhas to turn the wheel of Dharma, which is the sixth limb, which is the fifth limb. And then sixth limb is the limb of requesting not to enter into Mahaparinirvana. So some Buddhas, when they wish to enter into Mahaparinirvana, for such Buddhas we need to request not to enter into Mahaparinirvana. Please remain in this world to guide us, to show us the path, to protect us, to lead us, etc. Although they have sincere wish to benefit all the sentient beings without any exception, but sometimes if there's no right cause and conditions, or if the conditions are not met together, then they wish to enter into Mahaparinirvana. So for such Buddhas, we need to request not to enter into the Mahaparinirvana. Which is the sixth limb. And then the seventh limb is the limb of dedication. So sixth limb is the 11th verse, which says, with hand folded, I beseech those who intend to manifest the final nirvana to remain for as many eons as there are atoms in all the Buddha lands, to gladden and benefit all living beings. Now the seventh limb is the limb of dedication. Which is the 12th stanza or verse, which says, may whatever little virtue I may have gained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment. So we need to dedicate the first six limbs along with all our merits to attain Buddhahood for the sake of all the sentient beings without any exception. So, this is a proper dedication. Proper dedication is very important. If our virtues, if our merits, if our Dharma practice is sealed by a proper dedication, then it means our virtues or our practice will become more powerful, and it will become more difficult to be destroyed by the negative thoughts such as anger or other negative thoughts. So therefore, it is very important to seal our practice or our virtuous deeds by proper dedication. So, with this, I conclude my brief explanation on the seven limb prayers from the Samanda Bhatra prayer. So, at the end, I wish that with the blessings of our Guru, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha be with you now and always. Thank you.